welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Thank you for tuning in this week's NC Spin. The coronavirus pandemic is constantly changing, and we're going to try to help you keep up with how it's impacting our state. We're going to begin this week with an interview from the person who most explains and perhaps best explains where we are, DHHS Secretary Mandy Cohen. Then our panel is going to talk about how it's impacting our state. Speaking of the panel, this week's panel includes Leo Daltrey, former state representative, Chris Fitzsimon, director of State's Newsroom, John Hood, syndicated columnist and author, and Peg O'Connell, political analyst and health consultant. We begin our uninterrupted debate after these brief messages from our underwriters.
In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on health care costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted health care advisor for life.
Life's busy, but you're in control. As an electric cooperative member, you have access to lots of tools to help manage your home energy use and budget, so you can focus on what's most important.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Those of you who are regular viewers of NC Spin will obviously recognize this isn't our normal set for our show, but we want to respect the social separation guidelines that everybody's being requested to follow. And so we're trying our best to be able to keep our panelists about 6 feet from one another. We want to thank our UNC-TV crew for fast work in helping us arrange a new set and lighting in place on short notice. We'll see how well this works and maybe continue it for a few weeks more as needed. We want to begin this week's show, though, with an interview we conducted on Wednesday with DHHS Secretary Mandy Cohen.
Secretary Cohen, thank you for taking time to talk with us again. It's been a very busy week. When we talked last week, last Wednesday as a matter of fact, there were 7 known cases. The latest reporting I had was a week later, 65. If you plot this on a graph, it shows a very sharp spike. Is this surprising to you, and where are we on that graph line?
Well, good to talk to you again, and thank you for getting out good information to folks. I think having really good information, because it is changing so fast, is really important here. And yes, as we expected, we are seeing more cases climb here in North Carolina. As we are sitting here today on March 18th, with all of those 60 some odd cases, we can actually trace those back to a known contact or a travel exposure. Which means, by technical definition, we do not have community spread here in North Carolina. However, I think folks know that we have taken some very aggressive and made some very hard decisions about how we can protect the folks here in North Carolina. So while we do not have lab-documented community spread, we are operating as if the virus is out in the community, and then we need to be protected.
Why is it there's some counties that have no known mm-hmm. subscribed coronavirus victims, and there are several that just seem to have concentrations.
Sure. Well, we expect that to change over time, as we are seeing that it started in just a few states here in the United States and then moved to other states. I think we'll see the same. It starts in a few counties here in North Carolina, and we expect it to move because viruses move. And that is why we've taken the unprecedented steps that we've done in terms of prohibiting gatherings over 100, closing our public schools, and now, as of yesterday, closing bars and moving restaurants to take out only. I mean, those are unprecedented and agonizingly hard decisions to make, but we did them to slow the spread of the virus. We are happy to see that we don't have cases in some places. I expect to see more just because we know that there is a lag between what we are seeing in terms of positive cases and what we think is going on. And so we wanted to get ahead, to get ahead of what we're seeing happening in the state of Washington or in the state of New York or in Massachusetts, so that we can be best prepared here in North Carolina. And my goal is to see the virus slowly spread so that too many people don't get sick all at once.
Too fast.
Right. And so that we protect our medical access so people can get access to medical care when they need it. So we don't want to have everyone get sick at the same time. And that's why we're working so hard.
In talking to people over this past week, many of whom really appreciated the information that you gave us last week, there's still a lot of them telling me, oh, this whole situation's overblown, it's not as serious as this. Why is all of this taking place?
Yes, so this is unprecedented, and I think you are seeing not only North Carolina, but our country mobilize in a way that is unprecedented and historic. I just saw that the president closed our northern border other than essential commerce between that. I mean, that is unprecedented. So we are in unprecedented times, and what we can do here in North Carolina is just make the best decisions we possibly can. It's moving so fast. We are trying to move through it and make the best decisions we can to protect the people of North Carolina. And I think that we are doing all of those things.
So where are we on this curve? We talked about, are we still in the fairly early stages of it, you think? Is it going to get worse?
We are in the early stages of this. So I think what I want to communicate to folks today is that I do think that this is going to be something we're going to need to be looking at for over the long term. We are in a phase that is still what I would call containment, where we're trying to contain the virus, where we don't see it spread widely into the community. And that's a good thing, but we need, that is a very aggressive posture to be in containment. And so I do expect to see more virus here around North Carolina, and we may have to step up and do additional things. What I would say, though, is the virus is going to be circulating with us until we have a vaccine. I think we all know that. And folks who are working on vaccines have told us we are probably at least a year away from mass production of a vaccine. So we are starting to think through not only what should we do in the next 2 to 3 weeks, but how do we think about this whole rest of the year and protecting particularly our high-risk folks, those above 65 and those with chronic diseases?
Let's talk about that for a second, because last week you said you were a little more concerned about being susceptible if you were over 65. A lot of what has taken place, for instance, with people flocking to bars and restaurants and so forth, is they're saying, hey, I'm young, I'm healthy. There's just not as much risk in me getting this. How susceptible are these young people?
Yes, so they are right. Younger folks are at less risk of catching the virus, but of less risk of having a severe reaction to the virus and needing a high level of medical care or risking death. Our folks who are high risk, above 65, or who have chronic diseases are just as likely to catch it, but if they get sick, they get very sick.
Hardly anybody has not been disrupted by this in one form or fashion. With all the cancellation that we've seen in the last week, sports events, schools, conventions, meetings, concerts, we talked about the younger people going to bars and restaurants and enjoying time together and time off. The governor and you decided that you were going to close all of these bars and restaurants except for takeout service. Tell us what was behind that decision.
Yes, so I mean, these are agonizingly hard decisions. I don't want anyone to think it's not without incredible amount of thought and understanding that there are downsides at every turn here. These are hard, hard decisions, whether it was to close the schools and to think about kids in terms of ongoing learning, access to nutrition, and then frankly, just having the childcare that is needed for our, not only our healthcare workers, but we're gonna have to keep open our groceries and our pharmacies, and I'll need folks to work there too. And so we recognize there are people on the front lines of this that are going to need childcare. So those are agonizing decisions.
But there was some pushback to this decision to close the restaurants and bars. And some of it may be ascribed to be political, but respond to why this was an imperative decision right now.
Yes. So restaurants and bars obviously was a big step forward, and we know that it has real consequences for families who that is their income. And so that was a really big decision for us. But as we look around the world and around this country to see the high escalation of a virus with folks that congregate together in larger groups, we just did not feel that we could allow us to have those risks
need
out
more
there.
Of the separation.
I
was interested in watching one of the news shows in the last couple of days. A restaurant owner from New York, and of course they've closed all the restaurants and bars up there.
Yeah.
And he said that this decision was going to drive his company into bankruptcy. But he said he supported it because of wanting to take care of the safety of his employees as well as his customers.
Yeah.
And then he said something that just resonated with me that I've been thinking about ever since. He said, this is our World War II moment for this generation.
I will say that at every turn here, there are only hard decisions, which is, and things are moving so quickly. And so I don't want anyone to think that we don't know how hard this is for everyone. I want to particularly thank the healthcare workforce who go to work every day and are on the front lines of things. As a physician myself, I'm so grateful to the nurses and doctors that are going to be working through this. But yeah, this is a big moment for our country.
Talk a little bit about our healthcare systems, because we're reading and hearing that in other states, particularly New York, they're just overwhelming the hospitals. Do we have adequate hospital capacity?
So those are great questions, and obviously the things that we are taking the mitigation steps now, the closing of the restaurants and bars, to prevent overwhelming our hospital systems, our ICU capabilities. And so we're trying to prevent that from happening. Again, looking at just neighboring states not too far from here that are already realizing that they're going to overwhelm their capacity. We want to prevent that from happening.
Many are canceling elective surgeries.
That is right, and we have seen some
Did
of our big
that?
Yes, we have seen some of our big systems start to do that. Atrium, Wake Baptist, and Novant yesterday announced that they're going to be trimming down on elective surgeries starting today or tomorrow. I applaud that. I think we need to conserve medical resources starting right now. It starts with supplies, but also we want to make sure that we're ready for that surge. But know that we have a very strong coalition here in North Carolina that is broken into 8 regions. They've worked together through hurricanes, great relationships. So we're going to help each other out here.
How about
in North
our
Carolina.
Healthcare professionals? They are on the front line.
Yeah.
Do we have an adequate supply, and are we doing what we can for them?
Yes, I will say I am tracking people resources as closely as I'm tracking N95 masks, because I want to make sure that we have the people to respond if we need it. There's going to be communication that will go out today or tomorrow to all of our doctors and nurses to say, we need you. This is a moment. We're going to likely need volunteers for those who might not work in hospital settings.
And we need blood supplies. I understand that because of what's going on, the Red Cross is not able to operate their blood banks, and so blood is becoming scarce.
So we're looking at supplies across the board and making sure that we are as prepared as we possibly can be. We're in unprecedented times, and we're going to all have to work together to get through this.
I went into a grocery store yesterday. The produce shelves were empty. The meat counter was empty. The meat manager said people are doing panic buying. Yes. What do you say to folks about that?
Yes, the governor addressed that yesterday in his remarks, and he asked folks to not do that. Our supply chains are good. There will be more back on the shelves. We're going to keep grocery stores and pharmacies open so folks will have access to food. But I understand the anxiety there. And so what I would say, please use your best judgment with folks, because it's not everyone can buy extra food all at the same time, right. And we need to really be looking out for each other.
Well, we thank Secretary Cohen for taking the time to talk to us. By the way, you can see the full interview by visiting either the UNCTV.org website or from our NC Spin website on the featured videos section. And we'll be doing another interview with her next Wednesday, which will be on UNCTV, and you can look for that too. Leo, when we recorded this interview on Wednesday at noontime, there were 65 cases in North Carolina. When we stepped into the studio this Friday around noontime, there were 169 or 170 cases in North Carolina. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
No, I have not. I've never seen anything so quickly take the attention of all the people in our state. And I hope that we are willing to see the thing through, because it will end sooner or later.
And we're going to get through it.
We're going to get through it.
Peg, one of the things that after last week's show, we talked about on Tuesday, the governor closed the restaurants and bars in North Carolina, primarily because after all the sporting events were canceled, the schools were out, things were just closing down, concerts, meetings, and so forth. People just flocked to restaurants, flocked to the bars, which, of course, exactly opposite of what was intended to do. So the governor called and decided to close restaurants and bars. Now, he got some flack from that. Lieutenant Governor Forrest and others were highly critical about it. First of all, did he do the right thing?
Yes. You know, Tom, I was in Ohio last week before we understood how dangerous this virus really is. And Governor DeWine did the same thing about 2 days before Governor Cooper did. And I thought to myself, how courageous is Mike DeWine? And when I got back to North Carolina, I thought, how courageous is Roy Cooper? This is a hard decision. There will be political blowback, but he did the right thing for the public health.
But John, so Lieutenant Governor Forrest got some pushback from this, and then he walked it back a little bit. But I think his main complaint was the fact that he felt like maybe we hadn't taken enough time with the council, because the Council of State had to approve this action. Hadn't taken enough time with the Council of State to work on it.
Well, yes.
It wasn't so much that he argued with the decision as it was the way we got
there. Well, he argued with the decision also, but at least making it statewide initially and so forth. But the real process question is not simply Lieutenant Governor Forrest. Many of the other Council of State members felt the same way. I think Secretary Cohen is a clear speaker. She's giving a lot of good information. She's authoritative. I appreciate her and the governor and the hard work that they're doing. But they handled this very poorly. They need to understand the governor is only one of several elected officials. They all are elected by the people of North Carolina. It is very clear, in my opinion of lawyers I've talked to from the law, that while the state health director, the Secretary of Health and Human Services has the authority under existing statutes without any permission from anybody else to quarantine people who are infected with a disease in their homes, to address hazardous spills and so forth at a particular business, that the power to close restaurants and bars is not the governor's power alone. It is subject to the Council of State's approval. They knew that because they asked for it.
Yeah.
When they did not have any conversation about it. The governor had already announced he was going to do it before he asked permission from the Council of State. They pushed back. He did it anyway. We need to be collaborative. I understand these people are under great pressure, but there's been no significant conversation with the other elected officials, and I think we should not repeat that again. There could be tougher decisions coming, and there should be full consultation.
This is a public health emergency. I mean, uh-huh. I agree with you. The processes are great, and I...
Why not spend a couple of hours discussing it with Council of State?
You know, you have to act quickly in order to contain this virus or prevent the spread of it. And those are things that it's as deliberative as we should be in our process. This is not time for a lot of chatter. You have to act quickly. If there's blowback, then you pay for it later.
Well, Chris, I understand. They basically did it and then asked for permission. I don't think that's the right way to do it.
Okay, Chris, one of the things that has happened as a fallout of this is that we have been flooded with unemployment mm-hmm. claims in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. In fact, received 18,000 of them in a period of a couple of days. Now, to put that in perspective, in a normal month, we get about 11,000 for the whole month. So this
It'll go up.
It's going to go up. Mm-hmm. But so under the circumstances, there's been a lot of conversation about North Carolina's unemployment insurance accounts. Mm-hmm. We've got $3.9 billion in there to pay claims. But there are people who are saying we need to relax this some. Right now, the maximum amount you can draw in unemployment, which of course is based on how much mm-hmm. you were earning, but the maximum amount is $350 a week. And there's a fairly limited number of weeks. I think it's 13 weeks that you can draw.
We have the 49th, I think, most, depending on how you look at it, the 49th most restrictive unemployment system in America before this happened. We do have limits on those things. I think that there's a lot of issues here. I'm really concerned about, do we have the capacity at the Employment Security Commission to process all these claims that are going to continue to flood
in? By the way,
in.
People looking for a job, right. They're hiring.
Right. Well, and how fast we're going to be able to process them. There are tons of people who aren't covered under the Employment Security Commission who work service jobs, who don't qualify for some way. They're all out of work. This is happening across the country. Before we were taping, I just heard there were 20 million claims filed nationally. They expect that. This is going to be
Leo, you were involved in a lot of these decisions when you were in the legislature. Because at one time, our unemployment insurance account got down pretty low.
It did.
And the legislature decided they were going to take some actions to try to beef it back up. Do we need to loosen these restrictions?
You know, I think we have a rainy day fund that has grown exponentially. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if the governor would call the legislature back. I don't know how they would meet, because if you got 50 or more.
Yeah.
But I do think there ought to be some attempt to take some of the money that we save for a rainy day, because we're not only is the pandemic bad, but we're beginning to get into a recession. And so that's what the money is for.
It's really affecting the economy of North Carolina. Talking about calling them back, you're on the UNC Board of Governors. Y'all had a meeting by telephone.
We sure did.
Can you put 170 people together, 120 people together by phone?
Not easily.
Well, you could do it, Tom, but I'm not sure we have been adequately set up to, for example, hold binding votes.
Yeah.
By a teleconference.
And making sure the public can participate or at least watch, and there's coverage of that. But I will say, you know, the Georgia General Assembly is into self-quarantine, the entire legislature in Georgia, because there
because
was a legislator.
Had some instances.
Well, a legislator who had symptoms, was tested, hadn't got the test back, showed up at the legislature, exposing all those people to the virus.
Leo, you raise a very good point, though. You know, there has been in North Carolina a lot of partisan bickering and disagreements going back and forth. I think this is a time for people of all parties and all persuasions to come together, and let's be North Carolinians. Let's not be Republicans. Let's not be Democrats. Let's be North Carolinians. Let's be sensible, but let's act in what's in the best interest.
I think we saw that at the federal level, people getting together and passing legislation. That was good for everybody, and I think it's time for...
But you raise a good point. Should the governor call a special session of the legislature?
My own concern about that, Tom, is we mentioned earlier, I'm not sure that we're in a position that we could do it virtually legally. Again, I really do think we have to follow the law, even in an emergency. And I'm not sure you could take any binding votes at the moment. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Would like to hear from people. There's also the question of, don't call them until you've got something, a package already negotiated.
Speaker Moore announced that he was forming committees in the House to be able to address some of these issues. So I think that there's some cases where they're anticipating it. I've got to talk a little bit about this Richard Burr story that broke late in the week, because it is getting a lot of, we talked about partisanship, it's getting a lot of partisan comment one way or the other. The story was that NPR found an audio tape which had been recorded of Richard Burr speaking to a group of North Carolina donors, telling them how bad this coronavirus was going to be. Now, the two points that were raised about this, I think, number one was, if he knew this was the case, why didn't he go public and tell us, either in North Carolina or about the nation, about it? Because it was weeks before we really got into knowing how serious it was. But the other part of it was, reportedly, he sold a number of his stocks during this period of time, and he's getting some criticism from people who are saying, you know, that's insider trading, it's unethical. Of course, we also found out there were a lot of other senators and congressmen who did the same thing. Chris, where do you stand on this?
Well, I think it's very disturbing. Two quick things about that. He was saying this at the same time that the president was saying the virus is going to magically disappear, don't worry about it, basically downplaying the emergency. Senator Burke clearly knew that it was travel is going to be restricted, things could have to close, number one. The stock thing, I think, is even more troubling. He didn't buy other stocks. He just sold all his stock. A lot of it was in areas, hotels and other things that are going to be affected by this. I think that's clearly an issue. Before we came to tape this morning, he asked the Senate Ethics Committee to look into it. Tucker Carlson, hardly a liberal, is calling for him to resign.
On Fox News?
There's a lot of people on both sides that have serious issues with this. There are other senators were mentioned, but clearly Burr and Senator Loeffler in Georgia, I think, are the ones who are really the focus of this.
Well, and just as an aside, because 12 years ago, Richard Burr helped decide and design our emergency response system for a pandemic when we were talking about H1N1 and SARS and all our bioterrorism. So he is especially educated about what a pandemic like this can do.
There's so many wrinkles on this story, and unfortunately, we don't have time for everything. We'll pick it back up again, I'm sure, next week. But John Duke and other institutions of higher learning are already canceling their commencement ceremonies. Yes. Are we in this thing for a while?
Yes, they should do that even if lots of other things start reopening up in May, because there are things that are deferred to May that are really important. I think commencements can wait.
UNC also canceled theirs.
Yeah. Well, a number of them have. Right. I mean, I think they were the first to do that. So there's much more to this story, and there's much more for us to talk about, and goodness gracious, we could spend an hour or two. Our purpose is to try to help inform. One of the things that concerns me is that we're seeing panic buying, we're seeing people that are going out and hoarding, and we're seeing some anger among the citizens, and that's not going to help us get through this. Well, folks, you've heard our spin on the issues of the day. To stay informed all during the week, sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, give your feedback, and read my weekly column. Visit our website, ncspin.com, or catch us on Facebook. Until next week, stay informed and watch out for the spin. In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on healthcare costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.